Yeah. Which we, most of it we did not read, but I did explain to you that in chapter 2 of Nehemiah, chapter 3 of Nehemiah lists 42 families, 42 portions of the wall of Yerushalayim. The wall was divided into the 42 sections, and there was a different group that built each section. There weren't 42 groups, so there were some groups that built more than one section. More than one section. And the fact is that they began the construction of the wall of the city at the northernmost corner of the wall, and then they moved counterclockwise. They moved from north to the west, west down to the south, south to the east, and then up the eastern portion of the city to complete the wall. That means they ended at the point at which they began, but it began, basically the construction began to the north. I have a feeling that it began to the north because the city is most vulnerable from the north. And most invaders, most attackers of the city attacked from the north. So they completed the north, moved to the west, counterclockwise, south, and then east. At the end of... So the chapter 3 lists all of the 42 sections, yes?
And I just want to clarify, by today's geography, the beginning and end of the building would be, if I'm not mistaken, opposite the Rockefeller Museum.
Rockefeller Museum is where they would, the point. That's the northeast. Most corner.
That's where
the northeastmost corner. That's where they began. That's where they began, and then moved the counterclockwise.
So the land belongs to Israel, so it's our land. Right?
Well, we're learning Tanakh over here, Sylvia. This is not a not political, but yes, it does belong to us, and you're going to see more about that. You're going to see. So we were really in Nehemiah. In Nehemiah chapter 3, Pasuk 33. Vayihi kasher shama Sanballat. When Sanballat, he was the head of the Shomran Ronim, the Samaritans. He is the arch foe of the construction of Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash. The arch foe. He has gathered, as we will see, a coalition of nations that are opposed to the construction. You may have forgotten that earlier on he had offered Nehemiah, let us build together. And Nehemiah saw through it that this fellow who says, let us build together, really has absolutely no interest of building together, but rather he wants to be able to destroy from within. Now what they see before their eyes is the wall of the city is indeed being built. When Sanballat heard that we are building the wall, he got angry, and he was very... very angry, very upset. Vayal'eg al ha'yehudim, and he laughed. He laughed at the Jews. Vayomer lifnei echav v'chel Shomron, he said before his brothers and the hosts of Shomron. Vayomer, he said, Mo ha'yehudim ha'amelalim osim. What are these? Now, I don't know what translation you have over there. You don't have feeble is good. Sometimes it's translated as unfortunate. Amelalim really means feeble or weak. What are these weak Jews doing? Hayazvu lahem. The word yazvu lahem, does it mean will they finish this wall? Well, how does it mean they will finish this wall? When you build a house, there is a ma'azeva. Ma'azeva is the... I remember we used to have it in our homes, and say, where the water runs down.
Drain.
The drain. Or what?
Gutter.
The gutter. Yeah. That's put on when construction is finished. You don't start a building with the gutters or the drain. The drain represents the completion of construction. So he says, Hayazvu lahem, will they ultimately make the ma'azeva, the drain? Hayizbahu, will they be able to sacrifice? Hayichalu bayom, is there a day on which they will ever complete this construction? Hayichayu et ha'avanim, and in our last year, we talked about these words. Hayichayu et ha'avanim, will they give life to the stones? And we're going to see in a number of places that the stones of a wall are described in human terms. Will they give life to the walls? May aremot ha'afar, from the piles of dust, the hemos rufot. First of all, they are covered by layers of earth. And even if they finally make their way, they get to the stones. The stones are incapable of being built into a wall because they're burned and they're weak. The Tov Yahamoni etzlo, Tov Yahamoni was with him. Vayomen, he said, Gam Asher Hing Bonim, even what they are building, even what they are constructing, Im Yaleh Shu'ol, if a fax goes through, ufaratz chomat avneim, he can break through their wall of stone. Even if they will build, the construction is going to be weak. They don't have the materials with which to build a wall. So here they're making fun of this whole process, the project. Yes, haproyekt hazeh, this project that has begun. Shema Elokeinu, we will find throughout Nehemiah that he records at each moment the prayer that he uttered. Shema Elokeinu, listen to us, our God, ki hayinu buza, because we've been shamed, v'hashev cherpatam el rosham, and return their embarrassment upon their heads, utneim leviza be'edetz shivya, let them be spoiled in a land of captivity. Let them end up going out into exile. Val techas alavonam, and don't cover their sin. Vechatosam ufanecha al timache, and don't erase from before your face their iniquity. Ki ichisu leneged habonim, because they've angered the builders of Yerushalayim. Vanivneh tachoma, and what we did was we in fact continue to build. Vatikosher kol hachoma ad chetzia, and as each group completes its section, they meet, and the meeting of the walls, of the sections of the wall, is called the banding. They are bound together, and half the wall is completed. Vayehi lev la'om la'asot, and the people had the heart to do it when they saw that they were succeeding. There's nothing like success. They see that their building, so the heart of the people was with them to build it. To give you a little bit more of a picture of what Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael looks like at the time. So, in the that second sheet you got this morning, there. It was something that I had used in the shir yesterday on Megillat Esther. Only one section. Number three, this is the sheet. Number three, this is a Malbim in Sefer Zechariah, where the Malbim brings the words of the Abarbanel. And the Abarbanel, we'll go through it quickly, the Abarbanel lists seven reasons. seven reasons why Jews who were in Yerushalayim at the time, and here he's talking about a period a little bit before this, in the period of Ezra, 15 years or so earlier, why there was an overwhelming sense of depression. They were forlorn. They looked at their situation and they saw that there was so much lacking. And remember, at the same time, of course, there is a mighty Jewish community in Babel, mighty Jewish community in general in all of Asia Minor. So he brings the words of the Abarbanel, who lists seven things that they saw that were lacking. Aleph, you'll see on that third line it says, Aleph, Shero Shaloshova Po Hashchina Lishton Kavod Kemo B'Bayit Rishon. They saw that the Divine Presence had not returned to dwell in this house as it had in the first Bet HaMikdash. V'hei dvorim chosru b'bayit sheni. There were five things in the first Bet HaMikdash that were lacking in the second Bet HaMikdash. There was no Aron, there was no Urim V'tumim, etc. The Gemara lists five things that weren't there. So it was not the same. It wasn't like the first Bet HaMikdash. Second, Shoyotachat Rishut Malchei Paras, they were under the heel of the kings of Paras. They were not independent. They were a vassal state, part of the mighty Persian Empire. V'yoru, when they were afraid, Pen Yigorshum Sheinit Min Haaretz, they were afraid that maybe they will be cast out of the land again. They were not a sovereign people in their own land, which meant that there was this feeling that maybe this attempt at Aliyah, this experiment to reestablish ourselves at Eretz Yisrael, is going to fail completely and we're going to be sent off into exile again, because they are not the masters of their own destiny. They are there because of the good offices of the Persian government. Three, because there was no ingathering of the exiles. As far as they were concerned, the picture that they had in their mind, the prophetic picture of what can be considered the establishment of a Jewish commonwealth is, if there is an ingathering of exiles. Says the Abarbanel, Lefi Shalom Hoyot Kibbutz Klali, there was no general ingathering. Those who were cast out, dispersed at the four corners of the earth, had not returned. The only group that you have, in Eretz Yisrael, the 40 or 50,000 Jews, are Jews from Babel, only from Babel. But and even from Babel, they were just a very, very small number. We're not talking about masses of Jews. What did Emma Lazarus say? What's it say on the... give me your huddled masses. You're tired, you're poor, you're huddled masses. There, but this is how they saw a real divine reestablishment of a Jewish commonwealth, if there would be a general ingathering, and it had not taken place. Number four, Shero, because they saw Shenit Kalalaha Aretz, that the earth had been cursed, and V'lo Shavo Le'etana, and the earth had not returned yet to its strength. V'zeh Simon, this is an indication, Shalom Shavo Ha'ashgacha Shavo Kibarishona, this is an indication that the Divine Presence has not returned as at first. At the end of Sefer Vayikra in the Tochacha, it describes an Eretz Yisrael that's going to be absolutely arid, desolate, nothing is going to grow there, as punishment for not having kept Shemitah and Yovel, and that ultimately upon the return, Eretz Yisrael is going to blossom again, and it hadn't happened yet. Number five, Shero Shehe Lovazu L'cherpa Bein Ha'amin. They saw that they are a source of shame and embarrassment in the eyes of the people. Isn't that what we're learning about over here? These feeble Jews, what are they doing? Will they ever be able to build the wall? A fox will be able to break through the wall that they're going to build. They are a source of shame and embarrassment. The world is laughing at them. The nations surrounding them are laughing at them. Number six, Shadal Vesor Shahakutim, that's really Sanballat and his group, Hecheziku Bechelet Gadol Min Haaretz. Most of the land, the largest portion of the land, was in the hands of Sanballat and his group. V'ha'olim yibavel hayu metein mispar, the people who had come out from Babel were just but very few. Number seven, says the Abarbanel, and they shadow, they saw, she'ein molach aleim ish mi beit David, there is no king from the house of David. And they saw redemption, or rebuilding and reconstructing their lives in Eretz Yisrael requires a leader from the house of David. The only parenthetical comment that's extremely important is, this is at the time when there was prophecy, and this is how they saw their situation. Of the seven things that were lacking, we have five. They were lacking seven. We're lacking two. We're lacking Beit HaMikdash, and we're lacking somebody from the house of David to lead us. Right? We don't have somebody from the house of David. But all of the others, we do in fact have. We are not a source of shame and embarrassment in the eyes of the world. Oh, they try to make fun of us, but you know what? It's more out of fear than it is out of... we are a strong nation. We are a strong nation. We're a very strong nation. I don't know, I'm just remembering a story that was here in the papers of some Israeli who was on a plane in China, and he was sitting next to do they call them Chinamen? I don't know what they call them.
Chinese,
yeah. But you don't call anybody from Scotland Scotch. Huh? Scotch is the whiskey. They're Scotsmen. All right. So I don't know, this Israeli is sitting next to this fellow from China, and it's in China. He's never been in Israel, and he asks him, where you're from? I'm from Israel. And this Chinese says, my, that's a strong people. That's a strong people. You understand? Are there a billion Chinese? A billion Chinese? Okay. Compared to China, we become even smaller than we really are. And he saw... all that he knew, never having met an Israeli, he knew one thing. They're a strong people. They don't laugh at us. They don't laugh at us.
What are you going to tell the joke?
What joke?
The Israeli said to the Chinaman, how many people live in China? And the Chinaman says, a billion and a half. Chinaman says to the Israeli, how many, what's your population in Israel? 5 million. 5 million? When I go to Australia, I see Israelis. When I go to South Africa, I see Israelis. When I go to Argentina, I see Israelis. When I go, it's really not a joke, but it's
yeah, I got it. Yeah, we make ourselves felt. We make ourselves felt. All right. Anyway, what else? What else is listed over here? We are not under any other state, but we are. We are sovereign. The earth is no longer a curse. Five out of the seven simply do not apply today, which means the situation of the Jewish people today is far better in terms of its physical growth and development, far better than it was at the times of Ezra and Nehemiah. There's another sheet. You see, you know what I'm going to do now? I'm going to make sure you fellows don't laugh at me for handing out sheets and not using them. So, yes?
Do they still feel they want to find somebody from the
host today? Is it important? To us, yes. Yes, it definitely is. Three times a day in Shemona Esrei, we say, after Yerushalayim Ircha, we call upon God to return to Yerushalayim. We say, Esemar David Avdecha Mehedo Tatzmiach, bring that growth from the house of David, and bring us a leader from the house of David. We say it in the brothers after the Haftorah. There are a number. Yeah, there are a lot of places. Absolutely. We do indeed believe with perfect faith. Huh? Yes. Okay. All right. You've been learning too much Tanakh over here for the last few years. That's your problem. You're right. Yes, we definitely believe it. By the way, article of the faith number 12, according to Maimonides, is the famous, I believe in the coming of the Mashiach. The Chacham says Mashiach is a king who will arise over Israel from the house of David. It's a basic part of Jewish belief. We certainly believe that. And we look forward to that. Not only do we look forward to that, there is an obligation to anticipate. The Chacham says man will be punished if he didn't anticipate and look forward with longing and yearning to the coming of the Mashiach from the house of David. Absolutely.
So is that what they want, Mashiach? Is that what they mean when they say the house of David?
Yes. No, that's not what they meant here. What they meant here was simply somebody from the house of David who would rule over them, because this, in their minds, as it is in our minds, in their minds, a royalty, the royal house of David, royalty. And royalty also gives them a sense of sovereignty. We have our own leadership. All right. This sheet one that I gave you is the Ramban. It's the Ramban at the end of Parashat Hazinu. Now, Parashat Hazinu, well, he will describe it over here. Parashat Hazinu is a parasha in which there is a description of Jewish history. It's an unusual parasha. A description of Jewish history, and everything that is described there has in fact taken place. Moshe Rabbeinu tells them they're going to come into Eretz Yisrael, they're going to reach a point, a peak of greatness, then they are going to be swayed in the direction of idol worship, exile is going to come, they're going to be taken off into exile, ultimately they're going to return, ultimately God is going to take revenge of all those who caused harm to the Jewish people. The question that troubles the Ramban is, when it talks of a return, what return are they talking about? What's Moshe Rabbeinu talking about in Hazinu? Is he talking about when Jews returned from the Babylonian exile? Is Moshe Rabbeinu referring to the return of Ezra and Nehemiah? Is he talking of the period of Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi? Or is the description in Hazinu of Jews returning to Eretz Israel, is that at some later point in history, which of course would mean our generation? Is that what Hazinu is talking about? The Ramban, of course, is writing this about 700 years ago. But he's looking at the Psukim, and he wants to know, what is Moshe Rabbeinu describing in Hazinu when he gives us this panoramic view of Jewish history with an ultimate return of the Jewish people to Eretz Yisrael? What's he talking about? Is he talking about the Babylonian exile, the return from the Babylonian exile, now this period that we are learning about? Or is he talking about now this period in which we live? That's what he wants to know. And it's going to make a big difference. It's going to be terribly important which period of history Moshe Rabbeinu is describing. So if you take a look on the right hand side, you see where it says Pasuk Mem? All right, go down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 lines, and then in the middle of that line it says Vihine Hashira Hazot. You got it? Vihine Hashira Hazot. Behold this song, the song of Hashoshu. Asher hibanu le'ed emet v'ne'eman, which bears true and trustworthy testimony. Tagid kol hamotzot otanu b'biur, tells us everything that's going to happen to us with absolute clarity. Hazinu is one of those parashas that I believe anybody who learns Parashat Hazinu no longer requires any proof that Torah is true. You don't need proofs of the existence of God. You don't need proofs of revelation at Mount Sinai. You don't have to be able to prove that the world came into being as a result of an act of creation, even if you're going to call it the Big Bang. You don't need all of that. All you need is to study that song that was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, that poetry that was written by Moshe, which describes all of Jewish history, and we here at the tail end of Jewish history are able to see clearly everything it said there happened. So I don't care when you're going to date the time the Torah was written or given. There's no question about it that whoever wrote it had a clear picture in advance of all the Jewish history. So he says, it all happened. And he gives us now a brief description of Parashat Hazinu. Hizkirot Chilo HaChesed, he mentions first the great kindness, also Yimonu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God did with us. May us shalokachnu lekochonu lechelko, from the time that he took us to be his portion. It means that he gave us Torah. The Hizkira, the poem mentions, HaTovot, reminds us of the good she'osalonu b'midbar, that he did for us in the desert. Va'asher hinchilanu arzot ha'goyim, that he gave us the lands of the nations. HaGedolim v'hatzuim, the great and the mighty. V'rov HaTovah, and all of the good that he showered upon us here in Eretz Yisrael. V'ha'osha, wealth, kavod, honor, asher hinchilanu b'midbar, that he gave us as an inheritance in this country. And also v'chimirov kol tova, and also as a result of all of the good, mordu b'Hashem la'avod avodat gilulim, Jews rebelled against God and they began to serve other gods. V'hizkira hakas, the poem mentions the anger ashehoyo milufonav aleim, that God had against them. Until God sent against them in their land plague and famine and wild beasts and the sword of war. Afterwards, God dispersed them to all directions and to all corners of the earth. It's known. He calls in it Kayim. We know that all of this happened, and it indeed was so, precisely as it was foretold by Moshe in Torah. Ba'amra Hashira, now this poem says, Ki b'sof, the end is going to be, Yoshiv nokom letzarav ulemisanav yishalem. The end is going to be that God is going to take revenge of all who oppress him, and all those who hate him are going to pay. There's going to be a day of judgment. V'hatam, and the reason why those nations that have caused us suffering are going to be punished, ki ehem osu kol ha'ra'o dimanu, all the evil that they did to us, they did it l'sinato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They do it because they hate God. They certainly didn't do it to us because we became idol worshippers and they hate idols. It's certainly not for that. They don't hate the Jewish people because they made idols. Kohen like them. You know why they hate us? Because we're not like them. They hate us because we're not like them. We're the perennial outsiders. We are not members of, not really members in good standing in the family of nations. That was Aviva's shir this morning? Yeah? Well, I don't know whether we want to be members of that family. You know, there's a family we can choose. We can't choose all our families, but we can choose that one. So he says, goes further, by Yavdu, and the fact is, V'yavdu et HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the fact is that we continue to serve God, v'yishnu et mitzvotav, and they keep his mitzvot, v'lo yitchatnu behem, and we don't want to marry them. V'lo yochlu mizivchayim. We don't eat by them. V'yavozu avodah zarah shalahem, and we shame their idols. V'yavaru otam mikomotem. We remove them from our places. So they don't hate us because of us. They hate us because we're different, and because we do in fact remain faithful to God. Okay, ukinim shenema, as it says, pasuk in Tehillim, ki alecha horagnu kol hayom, kebeni shel olam, because of you we were killed. In Cain, l'sinato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu yasu banu kol ha'raot ha'ela, because they hate God, therefore they do all of this to us, and therefore God is going to take revenge. V'hem tzorahu m'sanav, the enemies of Israel are the ones who oppress and hate God. V'olav lehinah kein mehem, and therefore it's his responsibility to take revenge. Now, he wants to explain to us, when it says at the end of the Shir of Hazinu that God is going to take revenge, what period of history is he talking about? Says the Ramban, v'zeh tov abora, this is clear. Ki al ha-gu'ulah ha-atidah yavtiach, he's talking about the redemption that is to come. Not by it sheni. And that's what he says in the next sentence. Ki v'by it sheni, lo hirininu goyim amo. At the end of Hazinu it says that the nations of the world are going to sing the praises of Israel. They may do it reluctantly. They may do it with great pain, but they will have no choice. Too bad, you know, like, we won the Six-Day War, and the world had no choice but to... they didn't like it, but they sang our praises. And Tevi, they sang our praises. Forgot about the fact that it was July 4th and the bicentennial of the United States of America. So he says, since it says at the end of Hazinu that it will be a time at which the nations of the world are going to sing the praises of his people, that could not have been at the time of the construction of the second big Beit HaMikdash. Lo hidininu goyim amo, they didn't sing songs of praise to his people. Rak lo agu aleihem, they made fun of them. And what pasuk does the Ramban quote? Ma ha-Yehudim ha-Amele lalim osim, the pasuk that we just learned. They said they made fun of the Jewish people. What are these feeble, weak people doing? V'hoyu g'doleihem avodim b'heichal melavado, the great of Israel were servants in the palace of the king of Babel. Here he's referring, of course, to the idea that's expressed by the Abarbanel, that they were not an independent and sovereign people, but they were part of the greater Babylonian, which then became the Persian Empire. V'kulo mishubadamlo, all of Israel was enslaved to him. U'beyomim ahem, lo heshiv no kam litzorav, in those days, there was no revenge that was taken from the oppressors of Israel. The land of Israel had not become a source of forgiveness for the Jewish people. So therefore, what the Ramban is making very clear is all of the great things that are described in the last few psukim of Hazinu, a time at which the world will sing the praises of the Jewish people, a time at which God ultimately is going to avenge his people. That wasn't the period in history when Jews returned from the Babylonian exile. It's not the period of Ezra and Nehemiah, but it's going to be the period, as he describes, of the Geula that is going to come. And we're part of that. But I said it makes a big difference. And the big difference is what the Ramban is now going to say. And it's an extremely important idea that he expresses. And I remember that in the old days, you know, when I was more of a militant, you know, I'm a retired militant. So Oh, God, that I have get into all sorts of trouble with people. What are you talking about? This is the hand of God. What's taking place in the state of Israel? There are the Chalul Shabbos, the Dreyfus, and Barak is joining Hamas, and I don't know what's going to be. And Gazit is putting swastikas on kibbutz of God. I mean, that's a crazy place, a nutty place. All right. And but more than that, are you going to tell me that these non-religious Jews, they're the ones who can build a state? Can't be. So I would show them this Ramban, because the Ramban goes on to say, next page, Vihine, and behold, Ein Bashirazos. That means if you hold the paper out straight, I'm now on the left hand side of the paper. This poem of Moshe Rabbeinu, there is no condition of doing tshuva or serving God. It says that all of these great things are going to happen, and it's unconditional. It says nowhere in Hazinu, Jews are going to return to God. They're all going to become Shomrei Shabbos and Ochlei Kashrus. And they're not even going to wear kippot shalugot. That's bad, because that's swastika. So they're going to wear kippot shalugot. And all. There is no place in all of Shiras Hazinu where it says that it depends on tshuva, repentance, or serving God. Rakishtar edus shenase haraot v'nuchal. This Hazinu tells us it's a document that bears testimony. We're going to be bad. And we're going to be able to be bad. It says in the middle of the Hazinu, it says terrible things are going to happen to the Jewish people. And yes, that we are going to suffer. He is not going to destroy us. We're always going to remain. We are guaranteed to be an eternal people. God is the one who's going to do tshuva, and he's going to regret v'yifram in ha'ayivim, and he's going to pay the enemies b'charbo ha'kosha v'ha'kitola v'ha'chazaka with his strong, great, and mighty sword v'yichaper al chatoteinu, and he will forgive our sins l'man shemo, for his name's sake. In Cain, if so, Ashira Hazot Haftacha Mevu'edet Begula Ha'atida Al Korchon Shalmina. This sheet of Hazinu is an absolute guarantee that there's going to be an ultimate redemption of the Jewish people. And that ultimate redemption is not going to be dependent on tshuva. So therefore, no one can come along and say, well, listen, these Mechalei Shabbos, they're going to build a state. Don't tell God with whom to build his state. It is, of course, true, as the Rambam says, Maimonides says, in the Yad HaChazaka, he says, "Ukvar hivtichah Torah," that the Torah has guaranteed, "Shebesof Yasu Yisrael tshuva," at the end, Israel will do tshuva, "Besof Galutan," at the end of their exile. There's no question about it. The Rebbeinu Shlomo is not bringing about this great ingathering of the exiles, so that Jews are going to remain in the Chalei Shabbos and those who reject him. But he is patient, and he's going to do things for us that will ultimately bring back, as Yechezkel says, the Nosati Lechem Leiv Chodesh, I'm going to give you a new heart. I'm going to give you a heart of flesh and blood that will understand. I'm going to make certain that you will serve me. I will make certain of it. God, in his own due time, will make certain that, or yes, guaranteed, Yossi Savid is going to learn in Ur Sameach. There's no question about it. The only one who doesn't know it is him. But that's exactly what's going to be. But what it means, therefore, is this is an extremely powerful statement of the Ramban. What we've learned from the Ramban is the following. Number one, Hazinu is not talking the return of Jews to Eretz Yisrael that is described, that Hazinu is not talking about the return in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. Because in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah,
we were indeed a weak and feeble people who were not sovereign, no independence. I would say most probably not even self-determination. Some degree of self-determination is given to Nehemiah, but they still remain part of a larger empire. And the second, and extremely important idea that we learn, once the Ramban has established that the return from the exile that is described in Hazinu is not by Yitsheni, but our time, then comes the extremely important point that he makes, that there is no condition that it depends on tshuva. It does not depend, if you will repent, I will bring you back. No, God will bring us back to the land, and then ultimately he will bring us back to him. That's all, that's... Maybe one more thing. I nearly let you go without... Yeah. In this piece of the Ramban, four lines from the bottom. 1, 2, 3, 4. In the middle of the line it says, you have to hear this. This is great. Ve'ilu haita hashira hazot. Do you have that? Ve'ilu haita hashira hazot mikhtav echad min hachalzim da kochavim. If this shiro would have been written by some nutty astrologer, shehigid meireshit acharit, who wrote this, if it wouldn't have been written by Moshe, it would not be part of Torah, but an ancient papyrus manuscript written by, I don't know, Houdini the magician in the days of Akhenaten, king of Egypt. If it would have been a letter that was written by one of the astrologers, Kain hoyoroi lahaminba, we would have to believe it. We would have to believe it. Why? Because we know. Everything that it said has already been fulfilled. And he was saying this when only half of it was fulfilled. The Ramban is writing this when half of it was fulfilled. We're living now when all of it is fulfilled. So he says, because everything is fulfilled, lo nafal davar achad, not a single word of Hazinu has fallen and not taken place. And certainly we who believe and look forward the Cholei with all our hearts, L'divrei Elokim, to the words of God, we know, we believe in the prophet who is the most trustworthy in his whole house, Moshe, was none like him before him nor after him. So he says, even if this Shiro would have been written by some astrologer, we would have a responsibility to believe it. Because we know that it's true. That's why I say that Hazinu, if you learn Hazinu, and I'll tell you, if I would be teaching Balei Tshuva, I'd most probably begin with Hazinu, with the selection of many, many psukim from Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, and Yechezkel, and a few great ones from Zechariah, and I would tell them, this is your introduction to Torah. I don't have to come up with any fancy cosmological, ontological, theological proofs of the existence of God. Torah speaks eloquently for itself to us, to a generation that no longer needs to have faith or believe that there will be an ingathering of the exiles, and that Jews will return to Eretz Yisrael. We don't have to believe it. We're living it. We are the living testimony. So I don't need anything else. I don't need the codes. I don't need the codes. I don't know anything about the codes. I don't know how to work a computer yet. My wife promised she was going to teach me. I'm sure she will. I can't figure out the codes.
You'll be quoted on that.
I don't know. I'm not for or against. I'm just saying what I would do is teach them a Hazinu with a Hamdan like this. Back to Nehemiah. Vayehi.
Ah, yes.
Dalet, chapter 4, Vayikasher Shama Sambalat V'Tovia V'Ha'arvim V'Ha'amonim V'Ha'ashdodim Ki'altar Ruchal L'Chomot Yerushalayim. Take a look at the array of nations.
In geographically, what is their location from Yerushalayim? They are north. The Arvim, the south. The Ammonim, Ammon is the east. Ashdodim, the west. Do you understand what this pasuk is saying? Refers there to the pasuk. There is a coalition of nations that has Jerusalem completely surrounded from all four sides. And Sambalat obviously had no difficulty. Clinton had more difficulty putting together a coalition than Sambalat had. I mean, this was a coalition that was ready and waiting for it. Jerusalem, the small nation of Jerusalem, is surrounded completely on all four sides. And they heard Ki Olfar Ruchal HaMot Yerushalayim, and this is another one of the words that we talked about in the last year. Ki Olfar Ruchal HaMot Yerushalayim, Ruchal means, in a prophet here, it means healing, that the walls of Yerushalayim were healed. You hear how Nehemiah talks about the walls? Talks about the stones, like the stones have life in them. They're human. They're warm. They're not cold stones. These are stones that have been, the walls have been healed. They already have a report that the breaches are beginning to be closed. Before they were making fun, now they're very angry. They all bound themselves together. They all became part of a coalition. Lavoli lachem b'Yerushalayim, to come and wage war against Yerushalayim. V'la'asok lo to'a. This word to'a. Well, there are all sorts of meanings over here. I don't know what your English says. Confused. That's exactly. Now I'm. The word I was going to use, confusion. To create confusion. What we're talking about in this period is there's a real plan to attack. The same people who wanted to build together now are going to attack. Vani Elokeinu. By the way, Nehemiah knows what the plan. How do you like that? I mean, the Shabbat doesn't always mess up. There are times at which the information is correct. He knows of the impending attack. V'nitpalel el Elokeinu, v'na'amid mishmar aleihem yomam v'layla mipneihem. We pray to God, and we put guards aleihem on the parts of the walls, day and night, from before the enemy. So what does he prepare himself for? Tefillah and milchama. For prayer and for war. Vayomi Yehuda, the people of Yehuda said, Kosar Kora Hasabal. The strength to carry has become difficult. The work is very heavy. The upper harvey, there's so much earth that has to be moved. The Anakulomu Halud not Bakama, we won't be able to build the wall. Now, not only is there a problem that faces Nehemiah now from without, he's having a problem from within as well. The work is just plain too difficult. Vayomru, Tzareinu, he now reports what he knows about the plans of the enemy. Our oppressors have said, Lo Yedu, they shouldn't know. They shouldn't see what they're planning is a sneak attack. They shouldn't know and they shouldn't see our Hashem of all Tocham until we come into their mitzvah and we will kill them. There is not no halacha. We're going to stop the work of the construction of Yerushalayim. No more building in Yerushalayim. Finished. And Nehemiah already knows all of this. By Hikashepoa Yehuda, when it came to pass, when Jews came, Ayoshim Islam, there were Jews who lived with the Shomronim, with the Sambalats and the Tobias. By Yom Kippur, when they said to us, Ezefarim, 10 times they told us. Mikol because from all of the places, Hashem Toshuvu Olenu. Now, there are all sorts of shatim in this puzzle. These Jews who are coming to Nehemiah, are they with Nehemiah or are they against Nehemiah? On the one hand, it seems that they're with him because they are reporting to him the plans that are being laid for a sneak attack on Jerusalem. The second half of the process may also very well may very well mean that these people are want to help them out. And you know what they're saying? You know what you better do? You better return to us. Get out of Jerusalem. Leave Jerusalem because Jerusalem is going to be attacked and destroyed. Get out. Get out. What was that, our mishpucha over there? Our mishpucha before the Gulf War I. Yeah, what? Like, they called or they were here or something? They asked your mother, Rajon, they're not coming back to Toronto now?
What?
No, it was before the Gulf War. Who knows what's going to happen? So, I mean, I think we had. With children in Brentville, we had 21, I think we had 21 people in Brentville, I said like that. I mean, they thought, like, Toshuvu Aleinu, what are you talking about? Get out of the war zone. What it means is the following. If you take a look at it now, look at all the forces that are arrayed against Nehemiah. There's going to be an attack from without. The people who are with him in Jerusalem say that it's just, the work is too difficult. Jews who are coming from outside and are reporting everything that's happening are saying, you better clear out of Jerusalem. Most probably, the smartest thing for Nehemiah to have done at the time was, if he would at least compromise and say, we're stopping construction on the wall. 6 months. We'll stop construction. Do you know what he could have accomplished by saying, we'll stop construction, we will temporarily...
Time out.
So most probably, number one, the enemy would have said, okay, we're going to hold off. I mean, he could have gotten all of the pressure off him if he would have even made a temporary halt in his settlement activity. It would have taken tremendous pressure from all sources. He doesn't seem to have a single ally. What has he done, therefore? What has he done so far? He's prayed, and he's put up, he has soldiers, guarding the city, whatever you can call as soldiers, guarding the city. Vo'amid, Pasuk Zion, he says, Vo'amid mitach tiyot lamakom, me'acharei lachoma, batzachichim. He begins to place soldiers in different parts of Yerushalayim. Mitachtiyot lamakom, in areas below the spot where an attack may come, to wait an ambush for the enemy. Me'acharei lachoma, behind the wall, batzchichim, in the crevices. He is preparing for war. He will not halt construction activity. I place the people according to families in charavotayim with their swords, ramchehem v'kashtotayim, their spears and their bows and arrows. He is preparing for war. He means it seriously. He is not going to take the simple, easy option that most probably there are people who telling him you're taking a tremendous risk. Jewish lives are going to be lost because of you, Nehemiah. With your pig-headedness, your being obstinate, you're going to bring destruction upon us. Nehemiah listens to nothing. Va'eda, and I saw, va'akum, and I got up, va'omar, and I said, el hachorim, ve'el haskanim, ve'el yeter ha'am. This is his order of the day. He says to the chorim are the aristocracy. There was an aristocracy, and we're going to learn about them in the next... In the next chapter, we're going to learn about
the social classes in a Yerushalayim in which there were a number of very wealthy families and the masses of people were poor. And somebody's going to have to, what do they call it over here? The bridge, the economic and social gap. But that's going to be a problem that will be dealt with in the next parrot. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing how the problems that we have today were the problems that they had then. The problems that every growing society has. A new society is going to have all sorts of problems. And even in that Yerushalayim, desolate, there were the wealthy, the landed aristocracy, and their relationship to the people is going to have to be corrected, and Nehemiah is going to do it. But right now, the first threat is the threat from without. So he says, and I said to the aristocrats, to the Sganim, the officers of the crown, Bel Yetaram, and to the rest of the people, Al Tidu Mipneim, don't be afraid of them. Et Hashem HaGodol V'Hanodah Zecholu, remember the great and the awesome God. V'Hilachamu Al Achechem, B'neichem U'B'neitechem, and wage war for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, the Sheikhim, your wives, U'B'neitechem, and your houses. You have every reason in the world to fight. Don't give up. I mean, this is taking a tremendous risk. And it came to pass, Kasher Shamu Oyevenu, Ki Nodalanu, that when our enemies heard that it has become known to us of their plans, Vayofer Ba'elokim Et Hatzatam. I love this puzzle. Nehemiah doesn't take credit for anything. I mean, he could very well have said, Hey, Farnu, we are the ones who shattered their counsel, because we took a strong stand. We were not going to compromise. We weren't going to move from our positions. They see that we prepared ourselves for battle. They know we mean business. So no, he attributes it to God. God is the one who shattered their counsel. And we all return to the wall, each one to his own work. The threat of attack, and remember, they're still surrounded on all four sides by enemies, but the threat of an immediate attack has passed. From that time on and further, half of my young people, he had his own group of people, half of them did work. The Chetzio Marzikim V'Aramachim Hamaginim V'Akishatot V'Ashiryonim V'Hasarim Acharei Kol Beis Yehuda. He now has half of the people are working and the other half are defenders. Chetzio Marzikim V'Aramachim are holding on to the spears. Hamaginim, one who has a spear also carries a shield. I knew a comment like that was going to come from left field. I hope my tape recorder didn't pick it up, because my tape recorder would explode. The Hakishatot, the people with the bows, the archers, the Hashir Yonim. Now the archers don't hold shields, but the archers have Shir Yonim, like a coat of mail. Is that what they...
Armor.
The armor. In other words, the one with the spear, or for that matter, the one with the sword, also holds a shield in front of him. The other has a coat of mail. V'hasarim acharei kol beit Yehuda, and then the officers, all part of the house of Yehuda, also joined in this effort. Habonim b'choma, those who built the wall, v'hanosim b'seivel omsim, and those who carried the burdens that were placed upon them. You know what they did? V'achat yado oseh b'malacha, v'achat machazeket hasholach. One hand they built, no, he had from his own private little militia that he had, he divided his militia in half. That was the pasuk before. He divided his militia in half. Half of them build, and half of them protect. The other groups that were building but didn't have militias of their own. So can you imagine? With one hand they build, and with one hand they protect. The achat And one, Machazeket HaShalach, holds on to the Shalach. The Shalach is a Shalach is not a Cherev, it's not a sword. The difference between a Cherev and a Shalach is a Cherev has only one sharp end. The Shalach is sharp on both ends. It's
like
more like
a dagger.
More like a dagger, and most probably something that is used in close combat. Nehemiah's people are ready for combat from afar to an extent. You know, the archers or those with the spears. But they're ready for hand-to-hand combat. And there were those builders who, as they built, they had their swords on their hips, and they build, sword, build. And the one who blows the shofar was by me. But Omar, and I said to the chodim and to the skan and to the aristocrats and to the officers, del yeteram, I said that this is another order of the day. We had one order of the day already, saying we're going to continue building and don't be afraid of them. The second order of the day is Hamalacha Harbeu Rechava. There's much work and over a broad area. Vanachnu Nifradim Alachoma. What he's concerned about over here is he wants to let them know that we have to have a system by which we will know where to gather. So he says, I have the man who's going to blow the shofar. When you hear the sound of the shofar, that's where you're supposed to gather. Because here they are spread out over a large area. We are separated on the wall. We are far one from another. From the place that you hear the sound of the shofar, there you should gather to us. Elokeinu yilachem lanu. Nachamal, God is the one who's going to wage war for us. With all of the effort and with all of the energy that he expends to protect the city and prepare the people for war, he says, Elokim Yilachem Lanu, God will wage war for us. Banachnu Osim Bamalacha, and that's what happened. We continued doing the work. The Chetzer Magzikim Baramachim, half of the people held the spears. Me'alot HaShachar Atzei Takochavim, from dawn until nightfall. At that time also I said to the people, Ish v'naro yalinu v'toch Yerushalayim, every person and his servant or the one who works with him, we're all staying, everybody's staying overnight in Yerushalayim. Nobody's leaving the city. Not only nobody's leaving the city because it's dangerous to leave the city. Not only is no one leaving the city, but you see right away, they sleep with their clothing. They are ready and prepared for any attack. Ish v'naro yalinu v'toch Yerushalayim. V'hayalonu alayla mishma. What happened was, the night became a time of guarding, v'hayom malacha, and the day was a dead time for work. It means the Mefarshim say that many of them went without sleep for a long time. And if they slept, they slept with an eye open. V'ein ani v'achayu na'aray v'anshe ha'mishmar asher acharay. And neither I, nor my brothers, nor the young men who work with me, or the people who are on guard, asher acharai, who are behind me, ein anachnu poshtim bekoteinu, we didn't take off our clothing, ish shilcho hamayim. Ish shilcho hamayim, when it says we don't take off our clothes, the word ein goes on this second part of the pasuk, and we don't send our clothing to the water, we didn't wash our clothing. Nehemiah has taken the difficult way out. He could have made life much easier for himself. He could simply have said, in face of the world pressure all around them, he could simply have said, no construction. Farkik, no construction. He does not take that because he knows that in the event that he's going to compromise, he will be pressed for compromise after compromise. And therefore, he's going to make his stand, and he's going to succeed.